The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. From hot dogs to cool kitties, this is Dark Side of the Pooch.
Welcome to another edition of Dark Side of the Pooch. And it's perfect because it runs every Monday through Friday at 7 p.m. Central, which no matter where you're listening, it's dark here in Birmingham or the surrounding areas here. So it is Dark Side of the Pooch. He's Dr. Rab Stewart from the Rossbridge Animal Hospital. How you doing, my friend? What's going on? Everything good?
Everything's great.
Fantastic.
You know, we got a new new football coach in the SEC. I heard
Brian Harsin just got released. So, and by the time you hear this show, it'll probably be a couple days after that. But yes, that's probably a good thing. A little later than I thought it would happen. But we'll see what happens there with Brian Harsin. Of course, the show is always brought to you by Ed's Pet World down there in Homewood. They've been open for almost 50 years. They redid the streets. The parking's fantastic. Go down and see Angie and Seth. Not only do they deal in exotic pets, and I mean all kinds of exotic pets, and I have an exotic pet question I'm going to ask Dr. Reb right off the bat, info@tonycurryradio.net. They've got every exotic pet. You think chinchillas. They've got a cockatoo down there named Buddy that's fantastic. They got caiman alligators. They got giant snakes. They got all those tarantulas. They got all those things, fish. And rabbits and things like that. But they also have an incredible selection of toys. Seth's got his toy closet down there. He goes all over the world collecting unboxed, unhinged, brand new toys from the 60s, 70s, 80s, Star Wars stuff, Battlestar Galactica stuff. If you got some stuff you found in the attic, buy, sell, or trade, do it with Ed's Pet World, our proud sponsor here of Tony Curry Radio's Dark Side of the Pooch with Rossbridge Animal Hospital. 208-0301, 208-0301 at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter, now owned by Elon Musk, by the way. And also, of course, on Facebook, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital. info@tonycurryradio.net. Let's jump right into it. Mutt Mail. Tippy in Lexington said, is it a good idea to get a pet monkey? And I'm not going to read the entire email, but evidently Tippy has a friend of hers that works at the zoo in Lexington and has an opportunity to adopt the 6-year-old capucha monkey. It is well-trained. I'm not sure what the law is in Kentucky. I'm assuming most people that have pet monkeys are doing it illegally, but do you have any experience with pet monkeys?
Only my kids. sometimes they act like monkeys. You know, they haven't thrown poop yet. I'm waiting on that. Or maybe they have, and I just haven't found it yet. I'm not, you know, I don't know. What's that smell? I've never even been outside of a zoo. I've never even been very close to, any primates. So
really?
I haven't, we never, when you work on, primates or monkeys, it's a whole different level. Like I'm talking like research. Okay. So when you're doing research on monkeys, it's a whole nother kind of set of, circumstances and qualifications and certifications that you have to have, places like the CDC, or maybe Southern Research. Southern Research is a big name around town. I don't know if they have any primates or not, but it's not, monkeys are not just kind of run of the mill veterinary stuff. You have to be highly qualified to do work with primates.
Yeah. And I always tell my 18-year-old son, who obviously money is everything when you're 18 years old. I said, if you can't be rich, be friends with a rich person. Find a person that's got a great in-ground swimming pool. Find a person who's got a private plane. Find a person that's got a great boat because you can utilize their stuff and you don't have to worry about it. I think that kind of goes along with a monkey. We see BJ and the Bear, the old 18-wheeler show from the 80s. We see Marcel mm-hmm. on Friends, and they're all trained and they look so much fun. And as long as you don't have to take care of that animal, that's why we love grandkids, because we can leave when we want to, right? Grandkids are better than our own children because we don't have to take care of them. We can go visit, give them quarters, and then leave. I'd say that if you have a pet monkey or have a friend with a pet monkey, utilize that. But I wouldn't go as far as to say to have my own monkey. All right.
So, did she say, because I don't know, really anything about that certain, breed of monkey. Did she say how big it was in the email at all?
No, capucha monkey, I think, weighs about 4 to 5 pounds.
It's tiny.
Yeah. Capucha monkeys are kind of small. They have that white stuff around their face. You've seen a capucha monkey.
Oh yeah, but
and again, I mean, it's a situation where, you know, I almost got a Coda Munde about 4 or 5 years ago. I had one coming, I think from South America, and then when I realized, you know, this guy had a Coda Munde in his house, you know, and it would jump from thing to thing, but he also had like a 20 by 40 cage out in his backyard where it could actually stretch his legs. You know, he would let it climb in trees, but it was well-trained. It would always come back. But again, I mean, if you're going to have something like that, like birds, like Coda Mundes, like monkeys, I mean, it's like having another child in the house. You have to take care of it. You have to give it love, or it's not one of those things where you can leave it for 4 or 5 hours a day, right?
Yeah, I would think. I mean, they're, you know, monkeys are, I mean, they are highly evolved. You know, I mean, they are, you can teach, I mean, you can teach a monkey sign language.
Well, I know,
you
know, right?
Now, you know, so they're really smart. They're really emotional. It would be very, very cool to have one, but you know, it is to me, I mean, I think it would be very cool, but, you know, almost a companion in a way that, you know, a dog and a cat is not.
Yeah.
But, you know, with that comes baggage, like you just said, that you don't get with a dog and a cat.
I'm trying to think if it'd be easier to pick up women having a monkey or not. You think?
Cool.
No?
You know,
maybe a special kind of woman.
Hey, exactly. In some ways, hey, if you're Tarzan looking for Jane, then yeah. But, you know, if you're, you know, Bill looking for Brenda, maybe not.
It would
be
really cool to tell a woman, hey, you want to come over and look at my monkey and be serious.
You can say that to any woman, really.
This is Dark Side of the Pooch. You hear it every single Monday through Friday at 7 o'clock Central here on Tony Curry Radio, the TKR app. Thanks to tens of thousands of folks. I think we're over 100,000 downloads. Thanks to everyone who's downloaded the app. They listen to the show live. And, of course, if you miss it, 5 days a week. Go to our podcast, Tony Curry Radio Podcast. We're on every major industry out there. You can't miss us. And search up Dark Side of the Pooch or TK or Tony Curry Radio. You're good to go. So speaking of monkeys, I saw this really interesting story on 60 Minutes. I was going to send it to you. Zoologists and people in third world countries are trying to swab bats and monkeys, all types of monkeys right now, because they say it's only a matter of time before we have another viral pandemic in our country. And it's kind of crazy because you think, okay, I think we've had enough of that, but it's true. And one of the reasons that is we obviously have 8 billion people on this earth. We continue to move into their habitat. And so we're having to live with these wild animals. And with that, we're picking up viruses that were never intended for humans. They're called spillover diseases. You know what a spillover disease is?
Well, I would say it's also like a zoonotic disease.
Exactly. And so you are a guy who's on the cutting edge of veterinarian business, and you meet with people. I know you did a lot of thing with the monkeypox thing. I know you did it with COVID. Have you ever had any discussions with other people who are veterinarians about the decisions of what would happen if, in fact, some of these zoonotic diseases, if you will, actually started transmitting to our family pets? Now, we talked about, can you catch monkeypox and or COVID from dogs and cats? And of course, the science is not particularly clear in that, although we've seen some cases of that. Is that something that, and I know it's not something we worry about now, but obviously, if we're having things from our cats and our things from our monkeys and our things from our bats that are in and around our areas, it's only a matter of time before something comes along to our dogs. Is it not? Is that something that you think about?
Yeah, because it happened with COVID. You know, dogs and cats can get COVID. We know that dogs and cats can get COVID, and we know, or we're highly suspicious, that cats can spread COVID to people. Now, that's not to say that dogs can't.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, there's not definitive proof. So when you have new diseases that come about, it's possible that they spread to pets. But you know, as you're asking your question, I was thinking about who at this point, you know, with our, you know, level of domestication of animals, who would be more at risk to contract a new virus first? And I think in some parts of the world, it's not the animals that we should be worried about. It's not our domesticated pets that we should be worried about catching, you know, something from another animal. It's almost us,
yeah.
You know, especially if we are, there's all kind of research studies that are going on that are beneficial, and there's things that we know about, there's things that we don't know about, and there's things that are going on that we'll never know about. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the more you put people in the faces of bats and monkeys and whatever animal you think about, yeah, I mean, I'm sure that they are gowned up from head to toe. But the more you go poking on stuff, you know, the more likely you're going to get one of these people taking a sample. And if there is a virus, they're going to contract it. So, you know, that's the other side of that coin. But our animals are so hemmed in, you know, now, at least in this part of the world, more than ever. You know, everybody's got a fence. You know, their dogs don't ever really roam. They don't really come into contact with a whole lot of wild animals, unless they're rodents like, you know, squirrels or chipmunks or maybe, you know, the occasional mouse or, you know, rat, you know, whatever. So, you know, I would think that maybe humans are more at risk from catching stuff from wild animals because we're so dang crazy and inquisitive. We're more inquisitive than our pets.
Yeah, well, and that was kind of the whole idea of doing this research in that it's just a matter of time before something crops up and it's transmitted to humans again. And again, we have gotten it. I was looking at a story in Taiwan where there's a train station. There must be 5,000 monkeys. They ride on the top of this train. There's monkeys everywhere. And of course, people feed them. They get near you. They bite people. It's just kind of crazy. But it's just something to think about. Hopefully, it'll never happen because they are domesticated pets. And for the most part, they don't ever go outside our yard, like you say. They don't run out in the jungle and bring back diseases. But it's only a matter of time before diseases adapt. We saw that with COVID, right? I mean, how many different variants of COVID did we go through? Once we killed off one, it changes so it can continue to thrive and grow. So very interesting. Dr. Rab Stewart, Rossbridge Animal Hospital. His phone number is 205-208-0301. Rossbridge Animal Hospital. He's the best. We've been doing this show for a couple of years, 2-3 years. He's fantastic. One of our biggest listening populations here on Tony Curry Radio and certainly through podcast on Tony Curry Radio Podcast. Another question here from Bob in New Orleans. He has a 6-year-old Rottweiler that was recently diagnosed with splenic cancer. He wants
Either
to know
one.
what's that?
Yeah, that's
yeah.
good pronunciation. Either one's good.
Yeah, he wants to know what it is. He got it from his veterinarian, but he listens to the show and he trusts you. He said he wishes he lived here so he'd come see you. And he wanted to know, first of all, is this something that are most veterinarians slash oncologist? Is it someone he needs to go see a specialist about? And what's the life expectancy? There's different types of cancer, just like human beings. You have cancers that can kill you in 6 weeks. You have cancers that, hey, listen, on a good year, you have 3 to 6 years and you may live to be 20. But what should he do with this particular dog? And he wants to know how much he should invest in getting it cleaned up.
Splenic cancer is one of, I would say, the most treatable cancers that you can have
Okay,
in a
good.
dog, as long as it hasn't spread.
Okay.
So sometimes splenic cancers will go to the liver. That's the most common place that they'll spread. And then from there, they can go to the lungs or they can go to the bone, and also the lymph nodes, because that's how things travel anyway. You know, it was through the lymph nodes. The other thing that happens to spleens a lot that looks a lot like cancer is a hemangioma. So the number one cancer of spleens is a hemangiosarcoma, but a benign lesion of spleens, meaning non-cancerous, is a hemangioma. And it looks a lot like cancer, like on an ultrasound, and it can bleed. You know, it'll open up and bleed in the abdomen, and they look a lot alike, just grossly. You know, if you're looking at a spleen, so they're both dangerous because the immediate danger with this is internal bleeding because the spleen has a lot of blood vessels and it holds a lot of blood. So if the spleen ruptures, they can bleed to death, even though that blood will be internally. They can bleed to death, you know, in a matter of hours or maybe even less sometimes.
Wow.
So whether it's cancerous or not, if the lesions are there, then the spleen probably needs to be removed. Before that, a lot of times we will, whether it's an oncologist or a general veterinarian, will try to stage the cancer. And that just means that you look at the lymph nodes, you look at the liver, you look at the chest, and you look for signs of metastasis. You know, you look for signs of cancer that may have come from that spleen. But if the lymph nodes are good and the chest x-rays are good and the liver ultrasound is good, then as long as the pet's stable, the best thing to do is go ahead and take that spleen out, and then just remove the source of bleeding. Now, the other thing, and this may have already been done, but if you're looking for like a non-invasive thing to do that doesn't require surgery and could potentially give you a diagnosis is you can use an ultrasound, you can visualize the lesions on the spleen, and then take a long needle, or even like something that you would use to like a spinal needle almost. Mm-hmm. And you can get some of the cells out of that lesion and then send it to a pathologist. And then they may, you know, depending on the size of the sample and how good the sample is, and sometimes there's a little bit of luck involved, they can say, hey, this does not look cancerous. This looks like a hemangioma, or this looks like a hemangiosarcoma. And then, you know, with that diagnosis, you can say, all right, well, it's hemangiosarcoma. You know, it may have metastasized. We need to look for signs of metastasis. Or you could say, hey, this looks benign. So we can save some money and, you know, not run a bunch of x-rays and do a bunch of ultrasounds. Let's just go in and take the spleen out and be done with it.
This is really interesting. Dr. Rapp, Stuart Rossbridge, Animal Hospital. So we have things as humans, we can live right and do everything perfect and still get cancer. I get that. Is that the same with dogs? I mean, we have carcinogens, we have toxins, we have all kinds of different things that can create cancer in our bodies and obviously give us a better shot at getting cancer, not to say we want that. What do dogs and cats get cancer from? Is it a pre-genetic thing, or how do they get cancers? And do they get it from peripheral things? Do they get it from things in their life that they can actually get cancer from?
So that is a really good question. And I think that the outcome of this question is really eye-opening in a way. It really highlights how genetics, you know, play into this. Mm-hmm. Because you will not see splenic cancer in a small dog. If you see it, it'll be the one time in your life that you see it. You know, this is in larger, you know, kind of large to medium, or medium to large breed to giant breed dogs. So, you know, when you,
and why is
when
that?
You have, well, it's genetics.
Really?
And that, you know, I'm sure that there are things in dogs, just like in people, that are carcinogens. I mean, absolutely. Dogs that live in homes with people who smoke,
yep,
they will get emphysema, they will get bronchitis, they will get lung cancer. Mm-hmm. So certainly, but for things like splenic cancer, you know, I can't prove it 100%, but when you have a population of dogs that you just will not see that condition in, and then because of size of the dog, and then you have a population of dogs where it is not uncommon at all, like golden retrievers is a poster child for hemangiosarcomas. But I think it was either, was it Bob that wrote this email?
Yeah, Bob Newlands. Uh-huh.
Okay. So Bob, it's a Rottweiler. It's a large breed dog.
Yep.
These are the dogs that are going to get this. So, you know, that just shows that there are, at least in dogs, there are cancers that are probably, for the most part, either predominantly or 100% based on genetics. And it's not that they're being exposed to something. It's just that's what their body tells it to do, which is really scary. You know,
yeah.
If there's cancers out there, there's nothing you can do. It's in your DNA, and get ready, because when you turn a certain age, there it is.
That is incredible and great information. Thank you. And Bob, I hope you're listening to the show today on a podcast or the TKR app, 7 o'clock every Monday through Friday, Dark Side of the Pooch. Great information there. Five different types of cats. I'm going to see if you can name the five different types of cats according to one poll and the owners coming up here in just a second. Again, listen to our show every single day, 7 o'clock Central Time. Listen to it on our podcast. The phone number is 208-0301 at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter and the Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook. Get on there and check us out. We talked about what it cost average wise for a person to own a dog for its lifetime. The average 15-year-old cat will cost the owner roughly $25,000. $25,304, which sounds like a ton, but over 15 years, I suppose it is. Roughly $1,764 of that money, I don't know how they got it down to that amount, is based on buying new furniture after their cat has just torn the hell out of it. So according to one poll, there are five different types of cats. Will you want to take a stab at this?
Is this does it have to do with like the emotions of the cat?
Yes.
Like a happy cat.
Like, for example, one of the specifications is a climber. There's climbing. Okay. There's five different, they got all types of cats into five different categories. One would be climbers. Obviously, cats that like to climb everything. They like to climb wherever they get the highest spot, they're climbers. You want to take a stab at anything else?
Yeah, I'm going to try to just give you a few. So there's four more. There's four left. All right,
Yeah.
I'm just going to give you four. Don't tell me if they're wrong or not.
Okay.
I'm going to give you four. Okay. A lover,
Yes.
a hider,
Okay.
a fighter,
Yeah.
and a howler.
Okay. You know what? You're close. Lovers obviously are the best kind of cat. They're called cuddlers. They are cats that just can't get enough of you, and so much so that they will lay on your keyboard. They'll lay on your head. They're always li they'll hop up on the kitchen table while you're eating dinner. They're cuddlers. The cats just can't stop being around from you. There is something called a tornado. They're notorious for knocking stuff over. All they do is just get up on countertops or whatever. All they do is knock things over, and they know they're doing it. There is what was the one, the mean one? What was the one you said?
A fighter and
A
a
fighter.
howler.
There is this thing called a revenge seeker. That's the one that will just hunt down everything that it possibly can get into just for the sport of it, and it also hisses at people. It's just a major pain in the you know what. And then there's this cat called the graffiti artist, and that is the cat that,
Oh,
yes, that is the cat that
peas are like, is it
pees,
peas or like poops?
poops, hard to train, and just loves to tear the bejeebers out of every piece of furniture, whatever it is. It cannot be taught. It's the graffiti artist. It leaves its mark wherever it goes. Is
That's
that
fantastic. I think that those
about
are
right?
five great. I think most cats could fit into one of those for
You
sure.
know, the funny
That's
thing
good.
too is I mean, you have to have a cat for a long time to realize what kind of cat you have. Because and for the most, we have a cat, and it's I don't even know if I would put, I'd say it's probably the hunter, probably the revenge seeker, because it just loves to kill things, but it's also an outdoor cat. And my cat is an outdoor cat. If it gets below 40 degrees, I bring it in for the night. It seems to like that, but I have two dogs, so I have to put it in the laundry room. But for the most part, man, it's more of a, I look at it as a like a pest control animal is what it is. I mean, it's outside. It just kills mice and moles and keeps bugs from coming in the house, and it's great. So yeah, those are five different kinds of cats. How are the cats coming through? What is your percentage of cats to dogs at Rossbridge Animal Hospital?
Probably 80% dogs, 20% cats,
Yeah.
probably. Most cats are indoor, and there is a misconception, I think, of people. The cat's indoor, and maybe they don't need to go in. They don't need vaccines. They never go anywhere. They're not at risk for any bacteria or viruses. And I wouldn't argue that. The only argument against that is, if the cat does escape and runs away, then you have the insurance policy that if it does run into another cat that has FVRCP or panleukopenia or leukemia, Bordetella, that kind of stuff, that they'll be vaccinated against it and they won't get it. But the most important thing for dogs and cats, whether they go inside or outside, outside of a rabies vaccine, that's really important. But then the other thing is just being examined every 6 months, because we'll pick up on things that the owner cannot pick up on, whether it's a heart murmur or oral pathology like a growth in their mouth, or we'll palpate a mass in their abdomen, or a skin disease that they never would have picked up on or whatever. Enlarged lymph nodes. So, I think that that's, I'm getting a little bit off on a tangent, but I think that's why we don't see a lot of cats. The cats are out there.
Yeah.
It's not that people don't have cats. It's just there's, I think, a misconception of what they need versus what they don't need.
And I know this is funny because we talk about cats having nine lives, but there is this perception that cats will be all right. Even if they get banged
Yeah.
up. I mean, I've run over a cat with my bicycle on accident and it lives. I mean, cats are just resilient. I mean, they're just, and the fact that they're, for the most part, they love being outdoors. They're adventurous, and you just assume that they can get through whatever they need to get through. And again, too, is for the most part, if you have an outdoor dog, it's usually a hunting dog. Most dogs are indoor dogs, and I would say, what percentage of cats would you say are outdoor cats? I'm talking about cats that pretty much are outdoors, 23 hours a day.
So, of the 20% cats that we see, I would probably say that 100% outdoor is probably 10 to 20%.
Yeah,
So
really.
that's a very small percentage of the animals that we see at our practice. If we're only seeing 20% cats and only a tenth to a fifth of those are outdoor. You know, that's a small percentage of the population.
Can you train a cat?
Yeah, you can train a cat. I mean, you can train a cat to do tons of stuff.
And you give it treats like you would a dog? Is that how you positive reinforcement? How do you train a cat?
Yeah, treats. Negative reinforcement does not work on cats. You know, like you're not going to put a shock collar on a cat and make it work. You know, you're going to put a shock collar on a cat and you're going to create a graffiti artist. That's what you're going to do.
Do invisible fences work with cats?
Yeah, I think those will work. You know, I think the cat will respond to that. But, you know, sitting around and like, you know, trying to get your cat to, you know, do something with negative reinforcement, you know, outside of a boundary to your house is not going to work. But you can, I mean, I think we've talked about this before. You can seriously train a cat to poop in toilet.
Yes, I've seen that. You know, and it's interesting because I think if you have a dog that maybe is not particularly submissive, over the course of some training and it just getting used to being around you in the house, it will turn into a lap dog. But I think there are different types of cats. No matter how much you want to pet it or hold it, it's going to be whoever it wants to be, right?
Yeah. I mean, there are people all the time. I mean, there are people that have cats, you know, in their home, and they bring them in for us to, you know, do whatever it needs to have done. And the cat will be on our table and be submissive, or at least won't be aggressive. And the owner will say, if I ever tried that with that cat, it would eat me. You know, I mean, there are people that live with pets in their house that are afraid of them. Yeah. You know, the owner is afraid of the pet. And I don't know how you get in that position, but I mean, it happens.
Great emails every single week. Keep them coming. info@tonycurryradio.net, info@tonycurryradio.net, wherever you get your podcast, search TKR, Tony Curry Radio Podcast. We're on every major industry. We're on everything. So wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you go, and you can listen to our first run shows on TKR on Tony Curry Radio every Monday night, 7 o'clock Central Time, brought to you by Ed's Pet World, home of all kinds of great exotic pets. I don't think they could get a monkey. I don't think they'd want me saying they could get a monkey, but if there's a place they could do it, it'd be Ed's Pet World. Just saying.
There is not a better place in town than Ed's Pet World.
It's fantastic. I go down there every single Friday. I just walk to the joint. I always see something new in there. I absolutely love it. Great fish, great everything. And the service down there, Angie's wonderful. Seth's great. They're super. All right. Jill in Gardendale. And we've had this question a million times, but it bears asking again. What's the worst flea season down here in Alabama and other parts of the country? Does it have a lot of people are under the perception that once it gets cold, you don't have to worry about giving your dogs or cats flea medication? True or false? And is there a worse time? Do they come out more when it gets hot, or maybe they come in better when it gets cold? Right, because they're looking for a warmer place to go.
Flea season is, for the most part, year round, because it doesn't get cold enough for long enough to kill the flea population and the tick population that live naturally, you know, on outdoor, non-domesticated animals and plant life for that matter.
Yep.
So, you know, and I can't give you, you know, I can't draw a line in the sand and say, okay, If it doesn't get hotter than this temperature right here for X number of days or weeks or a month or whatever, then that shuts down the flea and tick population and you don't have to worry about it. I don't know where that line is.
Okay.
But I do know that in this region, fleas and ticks are not eradicated from the environment because it doesn't get cold enough for long enough here.
There,
so, I mean, is it, I mean, there's a chance that it's going to be, well, you know, I would say there's probably a misconception that it happens more in the warmer months, but I would probably argue that the pets are outside and running through, you know, parks, and there's more time spent outside.
Yep.
So it would seem that flea and tick season is, you know, heightened during the warmer months, but that is probably, you know, because we're outside more.
There you go. Another killer Dark Side of the Pooch here at every Monday through Friday, 7 o'clock Central Time, wherever you get your podcast. Dr. Rab Stewart, 205-208-0301, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook, also at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter, brought to you by Ed's Pet World. They do fantastic work. They love being part of this big show. Their business is just booming down there in beautiful Homewood. Nearly 50 years they've been in business. For all your exotic pets, they're going to make sure your pet stays healthy. They're there for you once you make that purchase. They do fantastic fish. They have tarantulas, chinchillas, rabbits, you name it, caiman, alligators, the whole nine yards. They have a great cockatoo named Buddy down there right now. Check out all their birds. And, of course, whenever you're looking for some great toys, it is coming up on Christmas. We're inside 60 days, my friend. Go down to Seth's Toy Closet and check out all of his unboxed toys. He's got watches. I mean, everything down there. So you can kind of kill two birds, pun intended, with one stone at Ed's Pet World. Dr. Ab, thank you so much, brother. You're the best.
Talk to you next time.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.